You're listening to At Any Rate, J.P. Morgan's Global Research Podcast, where we take a look at the story behind some of the biggest trends, themes, and industries and markets today. I'm Phoebe White, and on the phone with me today, I have Jay Berry, Head of Government Bond Strategy, and Teresa Ho, Head of Short Duration Strategy. Today, Treasury made its quarterly refunding announcement, and we'll be discussing everything we learned, as well as the implications for Treasuries and the money markets. But Jay, let's start with you. Can you just quickly walk us through what Treasury delivered today?
Sure, Phoebe. So from a high-level perspective, this may be the least exciting refunding announcement that we've had in more than a year, simply because Treasury refrained from making any changes to its auction sizes. But there's plenty else interesting within this announcement to discuss. But from that perspective, Treasury announced 58 billion 3-year notes, 41 billion 10-year notes, and 27 billion 30-year bonds for auction next week, all unchanged from the most recent new issue auctions, and in line with our own forecasts. And the important point here is that Treasury commented that it has substantially increased issuance sizes for nominals and FRNs over the past 9 months, and it believes that these changes have created sufficient borrowing capacity to address its near-term borrowing needs. So this is consistent with our expectations, as even assuming that nominal auction sizes hold unchanged for the balance of this year, net issuance of Treasury coupons is set to run about $2.8 trillion notional, or more than $1 trillion higher than we saw in 2020. So holding steady on nominals, but very much in line with expectations. Additionally, Treasury announced $1 billion increases to each of the three TIPS auctions over the coming quarter, which is reflecting a $1 billion smaller increase to the April 5-year TIPS auction than we had projected. We look for Treasury to make additional $1 billion increases to its 5- and 10-year TIPS auction sizes later this year, and we forecast that gross TIPS issuance will increase by $17 billion in 2021, compared to our previous forecast of a $19 billion increase.
So let's talk about what that means against the backdrop of our outlook for funding needs. Clearly, coupon issuance is already significant given the increases you mentioned, and Treasury's cash balance is also very high right now, near $1.7 trillion. So how are you thinking about the Treasury's general account and net bill issuance going forward from here?
Overall, we see the TGA on a declining trend over the first half of 2021. It's interesting that earlier this week, Treasury had forecast its TGA would decline to $800 billion by the end of March and $500 billion by mid-year. And we were given limited further insight into the path of this decline today. But that being said, the decline from, as you mentioned, $1.7 trillion right now down to $800 billion less than 8 weeks from now seems pretty sizable from our perspective. And we were looking for more modest decreases from here. But we do agree that there's significant scope for TGA to decline as funds that were unspent from the CARES Act but were repurposed in the $920 billion stimulus package that was passed late last year get spent. And as Treasury moves to normalize its cash balance ahead of the expiry of the debt ceiling legislation on August the 1st. So Treasury has stated today that it will reduce T-bill auction sizes gradually to minimize market disruptions, and that while it expects its cash balance to decline over the quarter, the path is relatively uncertain in nature. Thus, while the forecasts that Treasury released earlier this week are instructive on the direction of the TGA in our minds in the next few months, the actual pace of change could vary significantly from these baseline forecasts. In particular, Treasury has not incorporated any projections for additional fiscal stimulus in its forecasts this week. If Congress finds a way to agree on another round of fiscal stimulus in coming months, it would make it more challenging to meet these TGA forecasts, as presumably any new fiscal stimulus would require funding to go along with it. And in our baseline, in fact, we are projecting an additional $900 billion in fiscal stimulus will be passed late in the first quarter of this year. Now, naturally, the borrowing capacity that the Treasury has created with the ramp in coupon auction sizes that we talked about earlier, coupled with the need and desire to get the TGA back down, it means that the Treasury Department's overfunded in 2021 and that we're looking for negative net T-bill issuance. So we're projecting that the stock of T-bills outstanding will decline by about $336 billion this year. And this is all a natural reflection of the Treasury's goal to reduce the T-bill share of outstanding debt back to a more normal range. And if you recall from last fall, TBAC recommended that the more normal share should be somewhere in the vicinity of 15 to 20%. Thus, given this backdrop and a reduced reliance on bills, Treasury also announced it would cease the issuance of weekly 15 and 22-week CM bills later this month. This is relatively unsurprising. With less needs to finance in the bill market, some of the regular cash management bills that were introduced last spring are no longer needed. And when we had done some work on this last summer, we found that the demand incrementally for some of these longer tenor CMs was less robust than the shorter tenor CMs, which are the realm of the money market fund community. So it all makes sense to us that they reduce these regular cash management bills starting in the second half of February. But locally, discontinuing the issuance of these CMs will help the net issuance of T-bills remain negative over the coming month, bucking the seasonal upswing that we traditionally see in February when Treasury needs to increase its issuance to meet tax refunds. So going forward, our forecasts do not project T-bill issuance turning positive until Congress passes another round of COVID-19 relief, which, as I mentioned before, we expect to happen in the second half of March or so. This means that bill valuations, which have moved substantially richer in the last few weeks, that these valuations are justified by the expectation of negative net issuance going forward, and we're unlikely to see any mean reversion in the coming weeks.
I want to talk about what that means for other money market rates. But before we go there, Jay, there was also focus in the TBAC charge question on the growth of reserves and specifically what that means for the demand for treasuries, particularly coming from banks. So can you share what the insights were there?
Yeah, this has been, Phoebe, a pretty interesting question that we've been getting from a lot of investors recently. And in fact, the topic of bank demand for treasuries was one of the key components of our outlook for 2021. But the Treasury Department did ask a member of the Treasury Borrowing Advisory Committee about the implications of the current reserve environment for Treasury issuance and for demand for Treasuries. I think, as we know, reserves have doubled over the past year due to the Fed's asset purchases. But the presenter emphasized that the combination of ongoing Fed balance sheet growth, as well as a normalizing TGA balance, would lead to a very sharp increase in reserves over the balance of this year and into 2022 as well. And this presenter projected $2.1 trillion in reserve growth this year and $500 billion in reserve growth next year. Altogether, these projections seem pretty reasonable in the context of our own expectations as well. But the important factor here is that for demand, this reserve growth is likely to translate into strong deposit growth. And if anything, I think we know that loan growth has been pretty tepid recently for banks. So if they see continued deposit growth, but loan growth can't keep up, they're going to need to invest that excess cash somewhere. And we think it will result in increased robust demand for treasuries. And in fact, when we tried to tally up who would be the buyers of this outsized treasury issuance this year when we wrote our outlook back in November, we forecast pretty robust commercial bank demand for treasuries. So this is all in line with our expectations that reserve growth means growth in excess deposits and ongoing demand for treasuries. That being said, the presenter who did talk about this dynamic did caution that reserve growth is pressuring bank capital ratios, and that if the temporary exclusion of treasuries and reserves from the denominator of the supplementary leverage ratio is not extended, this could constrain banks' ability to gather deposits and lend in the repo market. So while it wouldn't necessarily impact the demand for treasuries, it could have impact in financial conditions elsewhere. And this is something that our colleagues in derivative strategy have been very, very focused on as of late. But given the support that banks have provided for treasury demand over the past year, extending these exemptions or making other changes to capital regulations to adjust for the outsized growth of the Fed's balance sheet relative to the size of the economy is really going to be key in ensuring that intermediation in the treasury market doesn't deteriorate and we don't revisit what happened last spring. So I think this question that was asked this week is very insightful because it gives us an insight into how to think about regulators may look at this going forward, because we understand that banks are a key source of demand for treasuries and that we need to ensure that treasury intermediation remains pretty robust and that we don't see a reversion back to what we saw last spring.
Okay, so Teresa, let's turn to you. Given the projections for negative bill supply that Jay outlined earlier, what effects do you think this will have on broader money markets and repo markets in particular?
Thanks, Phoebe. I think as it relates to the money markets, there are a couple of themes at play. You know, on one hand, a reduction in bill supply is going to be tough on the money markets, just given the sheer demand for cash-like alternatives currently. no matter which way you cut it, there is just a lot of cash in the system right now, from the $4 trillion that's sitting in money funds to the $3 trillion of reserves that are currently sitting on bank balance sheets to securities lenders that reinvest their cash portfolios. And in last week's case, to the GSEs, which we believe was the straw that broke the camel's back in terms of pushing rates lower, particularly in repo. For the GSEs in particular, their cash activity has always been around the collection of mortgage payments and the disbursement of those payments to MBS holders each month. But what we have found over the past 6 months is that we've seen that cash activity increase pretty meaningfully as prepayments rose and as more refinancings were being done in the marketplace. And so with that cash increasing, that cash was largely being invested in the repo markets. In and of itself, this is not a big deal, but certainly when you combine all the other factors and sources of demand that are coming from, you know, all over the place, especially when they all occur at once, it can cause repo rates to crash, which is exactly what we saw last week in the repo markets. On the other hand, with the transition to a bigger stock of treasury coupons and away from T-bills, as Jay talked about, conceivably, you know, we should see more repo supply to the degree there's not enough demand among real money buyers. However, that being the case, we have not necessarily seen that happen just as of yet. In fact, if we take a look at the current treasury dealer positions, with the exception of the long end, dealer positions across the curve are currently below their one-year averages. So what this tells me is that for now, there is enough real money demand out there for treasuries, which is to say we may not see a significant increase in repo supply. So net, with more cash in the system, less treasury bill supply, and not a lot of repo, funding rates are likely going to stay soft for the very foreseeable future.
So I guess given this technical environment, where do you think repo rates will go from here? I mean, last week we saw SOFR go as low as 3 basis points, and that in turn dragged the effective funds rate down with it. Do you see that happening again?
Yeah, I think there's certainly a real possibility that it could happen again in the absence of the Fed coming in and doing a technical adjustment. We've been trying to develop a framework in terms of, you know, thinking about how repo evolves this year. And based on our work, we find there are 5 variables that play a role in terms of where repo trades, namely 1, dealer treasury positions, 2, reserves, 3, money fund AUMs, 4, T-bill outstandings, and 5, bilateral repo volumes. But the 2 most statistically important factors in the model actually are reserves and T-bill outstandings. So against this backdrop where we're expecting reserves to basically grow by about $2 to $2.5 trillion this year on the back of QE and the drawdown in TGA, and net T-bill supply to decline by over $300 billion, as Jay mentioned earlier, you know, we can certainly see SOFR trending towards zero in the absence of any Fed intervention.
I mean, SOFR at zero seems kind of aggressive. Do you think this will happen?
That's a good question. In practice, probably not, at least not on a persistent basis. You know, what our model does is that it demonstrates the severity of the supply and demand balance in the front end in the absence of Fed intervention. So, you know, the trend towards zero does not factor in the Fed making any technical adjustments, which, you know, we do think will happen to the extent the decline in repo rates drag the funds rate down along with it as well. Historically, what we have found with the Fed is that they've always made an adjustment when the funds rate moved within a 5 basis point range of the upper and lower bounds of the Fed funds policy range. So if we are right about our forecast, which is to say that SOFR is going to trend on a persistent basis towards zero, then certainly this may usher the Fed to do something by the summer, if not sooner. I will also say that the other tail risk, and Jay alluded to this earlier, is that, you know, there could be balance sheet pressures arising from G-SIB surcharges at year end and the expected sunset of the supplementary leverage ratio carve-outs at the end of March. You know, we've certainly seen what a contraction in dealer balance sheets can do, especially when there's a significant amount of treasuries in the marketplace. For now, it doesn't seem like it's a big issue, but certainly this is something we'll have to continue to monitor.
Great. I think that's a good place to close. So Jay, Teresa, thank you for joining me. Institutional clients of JP Morgan can find more on these topics on JP Morgan Markets at jpmm.com or reaching out directly with questions. Stay tuned for more episodes of At Any Rate, JP Morgan's Global Research Podcast series. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please read JP Morgan research reports related to its contents for more information, including important disclosures. Copyright 2021, JP Morgan Chase & Co., all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on February 3rd, 2021.